On episode 57 of the new 8 Days a Geek podcast, Twitter lets you say more, EA likes Dalla Dalla bills, and the Doctor did get younger. Stay tuned. Welcome back to another episode of the new 8 Days of Geek podcast. I'm your host, Jesse Miller, and joining me, as always, the man who took some goddamn initiative today, Sean Scott.
Yeah.
Yeah, he did.
I'm a consummate professional.
That's what you are, something like that, a reasonable facsimile thereof. This is exciting. This is exciting. Another episode. We did come in about a week late on this one, and I apologize. Life kind of catches up to you every once in a while, and, well, it decides to basically knock you in the sack as hard as it can. So, things get pushed out of the way. Did you see on Twitter when I announced it, Sean?
No. Did I see something on Twitter?
Well, yeah,
no.
That's a good point. Well, on Twitter, when I announced it, in order to calm people's nerves, I said, you know, no podcast this week, but don't worry, ... And then I posted a GIF of Jeff Goldblum from Jurassic Park, where he says, life will find a way. I thought it was funny.
Yeah, I'm sure it was.
Fuck you, Sean. Anyway, so... We're gonna kick into the blurbs here. I think all these are mine, aren't they? All these are mine.
Yeah.
Okay, fantastic. So the first one we have is Twitter is bumping up not only the amount of characters you can have in your display name, but also the amount of characters you can tweet. So from now on, you can have 50 characters in your display name.
What?
Yeah.
That seems absurd.
50 characters. That is a long display name. And then the tweet count used to be 140 characters. It is now 280. That is... I don't know. I have really mixed feelings about that. Because, yeah, there were a lot of times when I had something I wanted to say and I had to shorten words, I had to take out punctuation, things like that. And, you know, people, at first I was worried. I'm like, people are going to think I don't know how to spell. I don't know how to punctuate, like, you know, contractions. But after a while, it just became, that's what you do on Twitter to make things shorter and more concise. Now with 280 characters, I can easily get out almost any thought I have. But... now thoughts are going to be longer. It's not going to be as to the point anymore. So it's,
when did this happen? Like, when did this like go into effect?
Oh, let's
see. If I get on Twitter right now, can I tweet 280 characters?
Oh yeah. This happened. I believe it was like the 9th or the 10th.
Really?
I think, yeah. Twitter's tweet for it is on November 9th at 6 p.m. So yeah, I mean, it's been happening because my phone does it now. So.
See, I was just thinking that I was not aware that this had gone into effect, and I would have thought that when it went into effect, I would have noticed the difference in, like, you know, the amount of garbage being spewed on Twitter by the president. So I would have expected to see, like, much more lengthy tweets being reported on the news every day.
Can our president...
And I haven't.
Can our president think farther than 140 characters ahead?
That's probably the issue.
Yeah.
I bet it is. Like, he's just trained himself to only think in 140 characters or whatever.
Yeah, I mean, it
makes
sense
to me. Maybe they just didn't tell him. Like, maybe they just never told him. Because, you know, he doesn't actually type the tweets and stuff, right? Like, you know, he's even said before that he just, most of the time, he just talks what, you know, says what he wants someone to tweet, and they tweet it. So, like, what if, like, his staff just, like, never told him about it? And they were like, so he still has to tweet in 140 characters because they were like, dude, we can't allow him to double the amount the amount that he can tweet.
Twice the ridiculousness in half the time.
Yes.
All right. Okay. Next thing I'm going to cover, the big two, Google and Amazon, you know, they have Black Friday sales. And for us capitalist dogs here in America, Black Friday is coming up. This episode will go live on the Monday before Thanksgiving. Happy Thanksgiving to those who celebrate it. If not, happy Food Day.
Thanksgiving episode.
It is. It is a Thanksgiving episode, and we'll talk about that later on. We have a little bit of a game that we're going to play. It'll be interesting to see how that turns out. But Google and Amazon, you know you want their devices, so you're looking at their Black Friday sales, and they're the Black Friday sales you don't have to go to a store to get. That's good news. Let's see here. So Google's Black Friday sales, these are starting early on Thanksgiving, and that is Thanksgiving at 12:01 a.m., so literally that Thursday, right in the morning. And they will end at 2:59 Eastern Standard Time on the 28th. That's the Tuesday after. So it's covering that whole weekend. So first thing, Google Home Mini will be $30 from the Google Store. That's also going on sale Target and Best Buy for the same price. However, if you buy them during the sale, you'll get a $10 in-store credit when you buy it. So depending, if you've got other things to get at the Google, Target, or Best Buy stores, technically that brings the Mini down to $20. So, you know, buy it from whichever store you have more things to buy from, so you can utilize that $10 credit. See, the other stuff, Google Home will be $79. It's typically $129. So, it's a $50 price cut. That's pretty good. If you're still on the fence about a voice assistant, or you're not sure which one you want to get, if you've been eyeballing a Google one, but it's been too expensive, then here you go. $79. Let's see here. And that is, again, Google, Target, and Best Buy. So that one does not come with a store credit, though. Let's see. Chromecast and Chromecast Audio, the basic versions, are going down to $25. That's $10 off. Again, Google, Target, Best Buy. No extra special stuff on that. But, you know, if you've been waiting to pick one up, now's your chance. All right. So that is Google's. Not bad. Let's see, Amazon's, it's pretty much more of the same for Amazon. Let's see here. The Echo Dot is going to be $29.99. That's $20 off. They have a lot more on Amazon because they just got a lot more devices. The second generation Echo will be $79. I'm picking that one up more than likely. The Echo Plus, that's the one with the Home Hub built into it, is going to be $119. So that's $30 off on that one. Amazon Tap for $80. That's about $50 off. Amazon Cloud Cam for $100. That's about $20 off. Kindle Fire HD 10 for $100. That's $50 off. That's not bad. If you got someone who wants a tablet but doesn't really care about, you know, openness and that kind of stuff.
Just sounded like you were going to say, if you know somebody who wants a tablet but doesn't care about, you know, quality or functionality.
It is a $100 tablet. But if somebody reads books on Amazon, watches Amazon video, you know, if they're very deep in the Amazon ecosystem, the Fire is not bad, especially for the money you pay for it. It's just very much so an Amazon product, you know? And then we got the Amazon Fire HD 8 for $50, usually $80, so that's pretty good. Kindle Paperwhite, I have one of these, they're amazing. $90, usually $120. The regular Kindle for 50, usually 80. So that's a pretty good price for that. If you don't need the light up screen in the back, you just have somebody who just wants to read books, doesn't want any frills, no nothing, just needs an ebook reader. The Kindle for $50, that's a pretty darn decent deal. Fire TV stick with the voice remote for $25. That is a good deal. Not because the Fire Stick, but because if you have any Echoes in your house, that voice remote could be paired with them instead, and that's $30 on its own. So now you got a Fire Stick that you can just throw somewhere in a closet or whatever and use the remote for a $5 discount. Other than that, the Fire TV, I mean, it's not bad. It's just not my cup of tea. I'm not a fan of their interface. So, and then obviously you got a giant list of TVs and all kinds of the other stuff that Black Friday shoppers like. So we won't go into that though. Let's see here. Last one. This is just funny, and I think everyone should watch it just because it is humorous. The Animojis that came out with the iPhone X have been put to very good use in my opinion. Instead of just sending stupid little emojis to your friends, some people have taken it upon themselves to reenact movie scenes, famous movie scenes, with the Animojis, and then put the Animoji heads in the actual movie scenes. So, Sean, did you watch this video?
No, I did not.
Okay, so watch the video. I'm gonna play it on mine. I'll mute mine, but I'll talk about it while you're watching. But like, first one is Pulp Fiction in the scene where he shoots Brad, and it's you got Samuel L. Jackson's character is the puppy dog head, Brad is the alien head. You know, and they just play out the scene. Somebody is, let's see, Dirty Harry is a fox. Dustin Hoffman in The Graduate is a cat. You know, just they're very interesting. For some reason, Jack Nicholson is always a pig, because they have him in A Few Good Men as a pig, and then as in The Shining as a pig. Tony Montana is a monkey. You know, it's pretty funny. It's one of the only ways I could see. Oh, Casablanca with a poo emoji.
You know? Trump's a poop head.
Yeah, and Trump is a poop head, and Hillary is a robot.
Hillary Clinton's a robot.
Yeah.
There it is. That is absolutely real life.
Yeah, so, I mean, it's pretty funny. This is the one thing I could see Animojis actually being interesting for. Yeah. I don't have an iPhone X. iPhone 10, or whatever the hell you want to call it. But this would be pretty damn funny. So. All right. That's it for the blurbs. We'll move on. And let's see here. So EA, let's see. They have some splaining to do. they've gotten themselves in a lot of hot water in the last couple weeks. Star Wars Battlefront 2 is one of their, you know, premier AAA releases that's coming up soon here. I believe it's actually out now as of this recording. So one of the things they had, in order to get any, you have to have coins, okay, in-game, you have to have coins to unlock, like, the...
Okay, like, let's start from the beginning. Is this a console game or is this a PC game?
It's all of them. I believe.
Okay. Yeah. So even like on my console, like I've got to have coins to get stuff.
Well, yeah.
Okay. Like, you know,
it's like an in-game. It's an in-game currency.
Just like a normal in-game currency, like any, like just like bottle caps in Fallout.
Yeah. Well. Okay. Battlefront is kind of a Call of Duty Battlefield-esque shooter.
Okay.
You use the you earn coins as you play games, and then you use those coins to unlock, you know, characters and weapons and stuff like that in the game. It's like experience points more than anything.
Okay. I get you.
Okay, so in order to unlock some of the some of the crazier characters, you know, like Luke Skywalker and Darth Vader and everyone like that. It's it's, I forget how many hours they ended up saying it would take, but it would take like days upon days upon days of actual gameplay to unlock any of those characters.
Okay.
However, you could buy the coins to unlock the characters. Okay. So, you know, people were saying, why is it that you would make it to where, you know, you could buy these characters for, so, you know, for money, and then make it so hard to not buy them for money. You see what I'm saying?
I mean, isn't that the way it is with all games, though?
Yeah, but I mean, not that crazy. Not, you know, that many hours. I mean, that's a lot of time. You know what I mean? I mean, so anyway, the most recent thing. First of all, EA, after getting crazy amounts of backlash, decided to backpedal and say, okay, we'll make them less coins. That way it's easier for the people who don't want to pay to play to earn these characters, which was great.
Okay.
You know, that was okay. But then EA also has a loot box system in the game, which you can buy boxes of randomized loot with crystals.
Okay.
But you can purchase crystals. So now people can buy crystals to unlock loot boxes to make it easier to unlock the characters. So now they've just traded one monetary gain for another. You see what I'm saying?
All right. I mean, whatever. Like all these games, though, like every game we play nowadays, especially mobile platform games, it's all like a creepy system of money laundering, you know? Like, yeah. So it all started back in the day with like Microsoft points, you know?
Yeah.
Well,
the thing is, like, with these pay to play games, I don't particularly care for microtransactions and pay to play. I don't mind DLC, but, you know,
I don't mind DLC either.
Paying for,
and that's why I guess I'm not really familiar with this kind of thing on a console game, because most of the console games I've only ever played, even with the Call of Duty, you know, it was just like pay for the DLC and that was about it. Like you just earned everything else, you know, like I don't remember there being like, you know, I don't remember you being able to like pay for the highest rank in Call of Duty. You had to earn that shit.
Yeah, of course. And that's the way it should be.
Okay.
This is more along the lines of, you know, Joe Schmo, who could barely afford to pay for the game, gets the game and starts playing, but gets his butt handed to him because Bill Gates decided he wanted to play, but didn't want to wait to unlock anything. Sorry, Bill. I didn't mean to use you as an example, but you're the easiest one at the moment. So, you know, it's kind of like that where, you know, it almost takes the fun out of the game because, and this is not just in the EA situation, but I'm thinking in all games, it kind of takes the fun out of the game because if you do microtransactions and you do pay to play, you are you're separating the groups of people. You know, a game is a multiplayer game, especially. It's about coming together as a community and enjoying this thing that you've all put so much time into. And when you're playing Call of Duty and you see some guy who's, you know, the top level prestige, you're like, you know, holy shit, that dude's good. You know, but it's because you know he had to play to get that far.
Right.
If microtransactions were a thing in Call of Duty, you could say, you know, maybe he's good. Maybe he's rich.
Right.
So it's like, you know, I don't know. I hate microtransactions. However, EA is the king of microtransactions, especially in console games and things like that. They're always trying to grab money. And I think that's one of the big problems in this situation. It's not, I mean, the mechanics were a problem. It was unbalanced. You know, it would take too long to unlock them normally. that kind of thing. You know, if you have loot boxes people can buy to get gear, that's a problem. However, you know, this is kind of EA's thing. They've always been a company about the money first. Money first, game second, players last. Always. So it's not like this is new. It just sucks that this is the way EA has decided to go. So, kind of buried the lead on that story. The thing is that now they've rebalanced the characters to make them easier to unlock, and they have temporarily removed the ability to purchase crystals to unlock loot boxes. They said they will be bringing it back after a little balancing and tuning, but for right now, you cannot buy crystals. So, okay, let's see here. Minecraft, you know, that's a thing. People still play Ugh. That. I play the crap out of it still. As a matter of fact, I just introduced my daughter to Minecraft.
Ugh. never liked this game.
No? Did you ever actually, like, really play it?
I mean, I've sat down and tried to play it, like, at least 2 different times, and, like, I could not play it. I could not do it.
It helps if you have someone to help you play it at first. At this point, there's so much stuff. It is a little overwhelming when you start playing it. I started playing it back when, I forget what version it was, but it was, like, beta when I started playing it.
I mean, I think at one point I even logged in and played, like, on your server or something like that.
Did you? I don't remember.
Yeah, that. I'm pretty sure that you tried to get me to play this game at one point a long time ago, and I could not get into it. And I know I tried to play it on my Xbox as well. Nope. Not my nope. thing, man.
Nope. Okay. Well, the story here is that MineCon, they announced several different updates that they were trying to make to Minecraft. And let's see here. The update Aquatic is upgrading the game's underwater sections. It'll add coral, kelp, and more species of fish, and also explorable shipwrecks. That'll be awesome. The game's water physics will be getting a facelift. This comes from Kotaku, by the way. They don't say specifically what the water physics changes are going to be, but I know things like buoyancy are a thing now. So that'll be awesome because, you know, you get tired of when you go in water in Minecraft, you just sink like a rock to the bottom. So that sucks. Let's see. They say there's no timeline currently for when the update will be rolled out. They also announced a super duper graphics pack. I love the titling for Minecraft things. It's very, just very geeky. So the super duper for graphics pack is getting delayed until 2018. And also cross-platform multiplayer will not be coming to the Nintendo Switch until next year either. Those are the two big delays. So, multiplayer is a big part of Minecraft, and the Switch is kind of a good console for Minecraft, to be honest. It's just its footprint and the controllers and everything like that would make it a pretty good console to play on. So it'll be interesting when they finally get the multiplayer up and rolling. Get all those Switch players on the Minecraft Realms community. I don't play on Minecraft Realms, which is the Minecraft hosted servers. I host my own, but yeah, why not? Okay, that's that. Now on to some TV.
I have to tell you something, Trevor. It's time for TV news.
All right. TV news. Sean, this one is pretty much all you.
It is all me. All we got lots, you. And we're going to start with lots of Doctor Who news. The first thing we'll talk about is it was recently announced, or yeah, I guess you can call it an announcement, but they released the first photos of Jodie Whittaker in the new outfit that she'll be wearing as Doctor Who when she takes over for Peter Capaldi as the 13th Doctor. Have you seen the photos?
I have.
Did you look at it?
I did.
What did you think of the costume? It's still very eccentric.
It is.
And depending upon what article you read, like I just linked to a pretty straightforward Deadline article. But I did read one the other day, and I think it came from a British source. And they went over how almost from head to toe, like every piece of this outfit is a nod in some way, shape, or form to previous Doctors. So there's a lot of things that we're all probably overlooking when we're just, you know, judging the clothing and stuff. Because I've heard a lot of Mork and Mindy references.
Yeah, it does have that Mork stripe across the shirt and the suspenders. But
the stripe
those
across
shoes...
the shirt, well, the stripe across the shirt is supposed to be a reference to Tom Baker's
Tom
scarf.
Baker, because it's the same colors.
Right.
These shoes, she stole those shoes out of Matt Smith's closet, I guarantee you. Look at those things.
I don't remember.
He had like strangely combat bootish shoes, if I remember right. Like they were underdress slacks, but
And then she's wearing a trench coat like David Tennant wore, and several different doctors have worn suspenders. There's all kinds, you know, if you really want to, you know, search it, you know, like I said, like Google it, I'm sure you can find the article that I read where they discuss all the different little details, but, you know, obviously, as you can imagine, because there was just a lot of, you know, vitriol when she was cast as the new Doctor in general, there was of course a lot of internet garbage hate when this was first posted as well. I mean, I don't have a problem with it. Like, I don't know. Maybe I'm just that much of a fanboy, like I've said before about certain things. But, like, I don't care. I'm happy with it. Looks cool to me. Yay. New Doctor.
Sean don't care.
Sean just wants to see new Doctor, man. And I'm excited. So.
Okay. I just sent you an image in Skype. So look at that image.
Okay.
You probably have to click on it to make it full size, but look at his shoes and look at his pants. The shoes and pants are definitely Matt Smith.
Come on, I'm clicking on it, but it's not making it bigger or anything.
Or you could just look up Matt Smith as a Doctor and look at his shoes. Either way, it doesn't matter. Skype, you have failed us!
Oh, there we go. It just took my computer a really long time to open it.
Oh,
now
okay.
It's opening it like 18 different times. Yes, you're right. Those are very similar shoes.
Yeah,
I agree.
She doesn't lace them up as far, but they're like almost like dress boots, a dress combat boot almost. It's weird.
Yeah.
And then the way he wears his pants high up on his legs, she's doing the same thing.
And I'm sure, I think the pants are also like one of the old Doctors. I think he wore pants like that. Like there's some references, I believe, in this costume to like Doctors like 4 through 7 or so. I don't know. I don't remember exactly what all the details were. Like I said, even up, like, I think she's even got like an earring on or something like that. That's a reference to a previous Doctor. So, I'm, like I said, I'm cool with it. I think it's neat. So,
yeah, I mean,
I'm
it's
excited.
It's not as eccentric. I mean, it is eccentric, but it's not as eccentric as some of the other Doctors. Like, it's not as eye-catching and crazy. But yeah,
it's also
like
It's also a little weird, you know.
It's
opinion.
Weird, yeah.
So,
but like, you got David Tennant with his bright blue suit, and you got Matt Smith that wears old man patterns and a bow tie, you know. So she doesn't have in this photo anyway. I don't know, you know, later on she may, but as of right now she doesn't have that one thing. Every Doctor seems to have the one thing. You know, Baker, it was his scarf. Eccleston, it was his leather jacket.
His leather
Tennant,
jacket.
It was his I would argue it was
Tennant.
His shoes.
I would say it was either the shoes or the trench coat.
Yeah, yeah. And then Smith, it was a bow tie.
But he didn't always wear the trench coat.
Exactly.
So it would probably have to be the shoes.
Yeah.
Like the Chuck
Taylors.
Yeah, the All-Stars. So,
but you
could also throw in the trench coat and even the glasses.
Yeah, and then you got Smith, who's the fez and the bow tie. And then
Capaldi,
the sunglasses.
Okay, yeah, I'll give you the sunglasses. Even though he doesn't keep those all the time either.
No, but it
now,
is.
And
his
he's
one
changed.
Thing.
He's changed his look. You know, like his look has kind of changed a little bit because like his very first costume was very like
it was very purple.
it was very like magician-y.
Yeah,
you know, he looked like a stage magician or something.
Yeah. Now he's like a hobo old man. He's gotten scruffy.
So I'm sure that she will, change clothes over the course of her time as the Doctor. But I thought it was a fairly neat costume. So
yeah, I like it. I mean, why not? You know, we've never had a Mrs. Doctor, so. I'm interested
right.
to see what they do in everything. There's no rules at this point. As long as you stick to the regular canon of the character itself, everything else is up in the air. I'm really interested to see what they do. I can't wait to see what the inside of the TARDIS looks like. That's my that's my favorite thing every time the Doctor regenerates is seeing what they
the
do to that
also
set.
Changes. Yeah. Right. And they might have, I don't know if they've released pictures of that. You might want to Google that. They might have already released that. I'm not positive. If you want to Google that while you do that, we can move on to the second link, which is, obviously we will see Jodie Whittaker, for the first time or at least Peter Capaldi's last time as the Doctor in the Christmas special. And, they just released a sneak peek at this year's Christmas special, and it will be called Twice Upon a Time. And the second link in the show notes will take you to a Deadline article where you can watch the trailer for it. And the trailer is a very entertaining conversation between Peter Capaldi and who's the guy who plays it? David Bradley. Yeah, David Bradley, who is playing the very first Doctor, William Hartnell. So the two doctors will meet and have an entertaining little conversation. And you watched it before we started. What did you think?
I can't wait. I mean,
I
always like when two doctors meet. I mean,
I think the guy who plays William Hartnell, David Bradley, I think he's really good because like I have watched. The original Who, obviously not all of the original Who series, but I've seen quite a bit of the first Doctor as William Hartnell as the first Doctor. And then there was also this guy first played this role on a BBC. And I think they did it as a mini series, if I recall. He played the role of William Hartnell on a made for TV movie or mini series where it was all about, William Hartnell and the TV show Doctor Who being created. And I watched that when it was on television as well. And it was really good. So it's really cool to see him actually get to play the role on the show and be the first Doctor, like that's a cool thing. So,
Speaking of the TARDIS there, I can't find any photos of the inside, but
right.
I did find
a
comparison of
the
outside.
Yeah, they released photos of the outside. That's what I was thinking.
The comparison for the
those.
Outside, it is starkly different.
Yeah, they changed quite a few things on it, but it's all little things.
Well,
Yeah.
It could be lighting, but it looks like it's a much darker, dingier blue.
They muted the color of the TARDIS, yes.
Yeah, like the windows are way different.
They
removed the logo.
Like in the windows in the TARDIS as we've known it, and I believe like the entire incarnation of the we'll call it the rebooted Doctor Who.
Yeah.
The windows of the TARDIS, it's broken up, like the one window pane glass is broken up into like 9 small panes, I think. And some of them are like darker than the others, and it almost forms like a T-shape, and they got rid of that as well.
Yeah, they got rid of that. Sign on the side that talks about, you know, the rules of the police box and everything is black instead of white. The ambulance logo is gone.
They inversed the colors on it. It's a black sign with white writing instead of a white sign with black writing.
Yep, they changed the handles, apparently. This is like a crazy breakdown from radiotimes.com where they highlight like every single thing. They changed the lamp. They changed the framing design. That's awesome. Yeah, so somebody broke down everything there.
Yeah, so and hopefully we'll get our new look at all of this in the Christmas special because, you know, we're going to see Peter Capaldi leave, Jodie Whittaker take over. Obviously, we're going to see him interact with a previous incarnation of himself as the First Doctor. Now I would assume, just like with any Doctor, when he regenerates into her, we've actually already seen that, actually, didn't we? You know, we saw her emerge as the new Doctor, wearing his outfit, you know, his hobo old man clothes.
Yeah.
But you know, his hoodie that he wears over top of, like, you know, a rumpled suit.
It's a good design choice, though. It's a cool outfit.
So obviously we've seen her wearing his clothes, you know, whether or not we'll see her in this new outfit in the Christmas special, you know, is yet to be determined, at least that I know of. But we'll get to see all of these things and hopefully one more thing, because the third link in the show notes here is just a rumor. And this is a very, very unsubstantiated rumor because it literally comes from just like people on Twitter. So put absolutely no credit in this. But according to people on Twitter, Matt Smith was seen on the set of the Doctor Who Christmas special. Now, they do address in this article the fact that filming technically ended on the Christmas special back in like June. However, it is not unheard of. It ended on July 10th is what it says. However, it is not unheard for people to film things at different times or for reshoots to take place or things like that, or, you know, and for there to be a reason for him to be on set, you know, this far after filming had officially ended. So with that being said, it is possible that Matt Smith could also be making an appearance in the Christmas special along with David Bradley as William Hartnell, Peter Capaldi, Jodie Whittaker, and then also they've all rumored that Jenna Coleman, who played Clara Oswald, has also been rumored to appear, which you know makes plenty of sense because she's one of those gals like Billy Piper with David Tennant, who kind of like inserted herself into, you know, the Doctor Who mythos, you know, Jenna Coleman especially has been in, you know, apparently all the Doctor's lives, you know, since the beginning, since William Hartnell. Billy Piper just managed to like, you know, throw herself into the Time Force or whatever and, you know, do the whole Bad Wolf thing, which kind of just like spanned David Tennant's life as the Doctor, as far as I, you know, could, you know, really know, and Christopher Eccleston. But so all of those people could possibly. Jenna Coleman and Matt Smith are just rumors, though. So put no credence in those rumors. But it is a possibility. So that would be amazing. That would be one hell of a Christmas show. If Matt Smith pops up too, man, that would be awesome.
It's one hell of a show.
I mean, we haven't seen Matt Smith since the Day of the Doctors episode, right? You know,
well,
the one with him.
I saw him last Tuesday at our poker game, but.
Well, yeah, I mean, I forgot about that, but, you know, I forgot the fact that you hang out with him all the time, right?
Yeah.
But wasn't the last episode he was in, was it the 50th anniversary? I can't remember like the order in which, you know, they regenerated and everything. Like, did he regenerate to Capaldi at the end of the episode with him and John Hurt and David Tennant? Or was that in a separate episode? I think it might have been in a separate episode.
Let us see.
Either way, it's been some time since we've seen Matt Smith as the Doctor.
Deep Breath was the episode name, 2014.
So that would have been his... That was not the 50th anniversary special. So...
Yeah, I don't know. I'm not sure. Because I think they may be slightly mistaken on that, but he may have had like a flashback scene or something at that point.
Oh, yeah. Either way, looking forward to the Christmas special. That's what real Christmas is, man. Nowadays, it has been for like years for me now. Like that's what I look forward to every Christmas.
All right. Okay. So,
all right, that's enough Doctor Who news. Moving on to Fox, the Orville, which we've spoken
about.
Okay,
that's enough Fox news. So,
the Orville, which we've spoken about a couple times, I think, since it was, you know, we discussed it when they announced the show being created, and then we discussed it when I started watching it earlier this year. Did you ever watch it at all?
Oh yeah, yeah. I think I'm two episodes behind because I've been busy, but I love the show. I thought it was really good. Okay. The fact that it was a little heavier than the previews made it out to be.
Yes, it was a lot heavier than I thought it was going to be. I was expecting like you know a half hour sci-fi sitcom, and then we got you know an hour long Star Trek with kind of douchey people, which. I wasn't sure about it in the beginning. It has grown on me, and I will give Seth MacFarlane credit. He has done some damn good science fiction. Sometimes the comedy, I feel, is a little lacking, and sometimes it's just plain bad.
always and, a and Derek.
And there has been at least like there's been at least like one episode where I like the entire episode just made me angry, you know, because I was like, hey, I get it. These guys are assholes, but they're also employed, you know, like this is their job, you know, like they shouldn't be this much of idiots. You know, you're making them out to be completely incompetent.
Yeah.
And in reality, they're flying, you know, a military vessel through space. So, you know, you need to balance that.
Yeah, because there's nobody incompetent in our military.
Well, no, I get it. I know. I'm just saying. But like an entire ship full of incompetent people. Like
yeah.
The episode I'm talking about, and hopefully, and I think you'd be this far, was an episode where they went on like a secret away mission to a planet that hadn't developed space flight yet that was very similar to early 20th century. Did you see that one yet?
I think I did, yeah.
So, like, that episode drove me up a wall because, like, they went there with, like, very, like, they went there to rescue, you know, whatever they call their people, Federation, Starfleet, whatever, you know, scientists who had secretly been there studying this race of people that were developing very similarly to Earth. Except all the way across the galaxy, and they go and these scientists have gone missing, so they're on a secret away mission. And just like Star Trek, they have you know like a prime directive where they're not allowed to like you know make contact with these alien races that haven't achieved spaceflight yet. And they are on this secret away mission that they have clearly done like zero research for. I mean, they don't know the monetary currency. They don't know the denominations. They don't know the clothing that they're wearing has significant religious connotations. They don't know anything about the civilization they're going to infiltrate whatsoever. And they make just idiot mistakes. And you and for writing purposes, I understand that they needed to get the characters in trouble, but there are easier ways to do that than making the entire team completely incompetent and ill prepared for their voyage. And it just that one episode just infuriated me the entire time. I don't know why, but there have been plenty of very, very good episodes. So I'm happy to say that Fox announced that it will be getting a season two. It's already been renewed for next year. There are only like 3 episodes left. It was originally going to be a 13-episode season, but they've actually knocked that down to 12. And so it's going to end in like 3 weeks, I believe. And then next year, there will be a season 2, and its length is to be determined. And I read in another article that this show was never intended to be a full 22-episode network series like many shows are. So, I mean, you may only get 13 again next year, but we may get more than that. But the likelihood of getting 22 is probably less. Yeah. So, but that's cool. I mean, network television doesn't necessarily need to be 22 episode seasons all the time, but you know, cable stations have proved that. So I don't know why network TV hasn't fallen more in line with that, but either way, season 2 coming next season. I'm happy for it. I'll watch it. So the fact that it made it through this one season means that it now is deserving of a season pass on my TiVo.
Ooh.
So I won't have to actually look for it in the guide, you know, each week and set it to record manually.
That's something special right there.
I know. Good job, Seth MacFarlane. And I think we should point out, too, that, you know, Fox didn't cancel a sci-fi television show.
Good
on you, Fox. But, however, I would also like to point out, if this show is worthy of a season 2 and Firefly wasn't, I don't understand what criteria you're judging things on. So, moving on to the next article, which is also somewhat Fox-related, and almost seems like it is becoming a regular segment on this show. what is leaving Netflix this month that is going to piss me off? And that is, It's Always Sunny in Philadelphia. And I mean, we'd have to go back and listen, but I'm almost positive that I've mentioned in previous episodes that, like, they damn well better not remove this show from Netflix. and now it's been announced that on December 8th, the FX series It's Always Sunny in Philadelphia will no longer be available on Netflix. And this comes on the heels of, you know, all of the other announcements that we've discussed lately, up to and including Bob's Burgers, Louie, Bones. We never discussed Bones, but still, Family Guy, The X-Files, and certain seasons of Futurama. All Fox shows that have been removed from Netflix recently. So there was apparently like a very large, you know, licensing deal between the two that has expired and will not be renewed. So you can probably expect other Fox or FX shows to leave the Netflix platform soon as well. So I'm going to call it right now, because I said something to my wife last night while we were on Netflix, that the next thing that I would expect to leave is going to be Archer. That's my next guess, because it's just another long-running FX show that is still on television and still popular. And so I would bet that it's the next thing to go. Now, they do mention that other shows that have been set for removal have been re-upped individually before, such as American Horror Story, which Netflix did keep their rights to. So who knows? But and I don't know like when the rights to Archer ends or anything like that. I'm just randomly pulling another FX show that I like out of my ass and saying it's going to be the next one, because it just seems like they're going down a list of all of my favorite television shows and removing them from the platform.
Sean's so, not bitter at all.
Not at all. I mean, they might as well have just mailed me a giant letter that said, go order Hulu.
They should have just ordered that and wrapped it around to just a big dick in a box.
Right, exactly. So if you're a fan of It's Always Sunny in Philadelphia and you want to watch it on Netflix, you've got until December 8th to binge watch 12 seasons before it leaves the platform. I know, dude, 12
It's been on
seasons.
for a while. It's so good, though.
Yeah, it's been on for a long time and it's still on television and it's still hilarious. So I'm just going to wait another 2 weeks until they announce that this is moving to Hulu. And I say it every time we record because this is a regular thing now. And then I'm just going to go buy my Hulu subscription. I'm going to do it, Netflix. I'm going to do it. So,
It's
but we'll talk.
some of
We'll
the
talk.
Hulu originals are worth it, to be honest.
I don't really, I haven't watched any of the Hulu originals.
Though there's a
So,
new one out, Future Man, that is, I mean, it's like really crude dude humor, but it's pretty damn funny.
well, when we get down to the movie category, we'll talk a little more about, this whole Fox, Netflix, original content versus non-original content. Just that whole situation because it comes into play in the story we talk about in the movie section. So, we will move on to the next story in the television category, and we're moving over from Netflix to Amazon. And Amazon has, man, I question this too. I tell you what. So Amazon is set to make like the most expensive television show of television. They just spent, and I just want to scroll down to make sure I get the number right, because I believe it was $250 million, and now I don't even see it. Netflix, or not Netflix, Amazon. Amazon has purchased the production rights to, what are you listening to in the background?
Freaking Hollywood
What the hell
Reporter
was
and your
that?
autoplay bullshit. That's
Oh,
the trailer for it. It's just it autoplayed in the
gotcha.
background on me. All right, go ahead.
I'm still scrolling through here. How am I not seeing where they say like how much they spent on this?
You keep talking and I'll try to find it.
Yeah, either way, Amazon has purchased the production rights to Lord of the Rings, okay? So they are going to make a Lord of the Rings television series. Their goal here is to try to find their Game of Thrones. They want a massively popular fantasy series that's going to bring in, like geek culture is the big thing now, and so they want to compete on the level that HBO has with like Game of Thrones, or and even like I was even saying the other day that I believe, HBO has already invested in Westworld and the fact that they know Game of Thrones is going away after a season. They've already invested in their new big, fervent fan base type of thing, and Amazon's goal here is to get their version of that. And so they thought the good idea here would be to purchase the rights to Lord of the Rings, and they spent a exorbitant amount of money
Okay.
getting the rights to this
On
show.
that note, Amazon hasn't revealed how much they paid. However, a report from Deadline earlier claimed that Amazon, Netflix, and HBO were approached with the project, and the rights alone were in the $200 to $250 million
Right.
dollar range.
That's what they were saying, that it was $250 million for the rights alone. So we're just gonna go with that and say that's, but that's just the rights alone. And there was another article that I read earlier today where it said, it was all about the most expensive television show in history, and it was saying that like, just production, of a show like this and how much it's gonna cost. I mean, this show is going to overall be the most expensive television show in the history of television, for what they're putting into it. And Amazon has said that it's not going to be like a retelling of The Lord of the Rings or even The Hobbit or anything like that. It's going to be an entirely different tale from the Lord of the Rings story that will predate the Fellowship of the Ring. So some people have stated that that means they might be wanting to tell the Cimmerillion, which I picked up a long time ago and managed to read, like, you know, a chapter of before returning it to the library. So that's not something that would excite me at all. But, I mean, this is a huge, huge property that Amazon now has the rights to, and they plan on doing something massive with it. What are your thoughts? Is this, do you think this is the right move?
I don't know. I mean, it could, a property this big could be a Game of Thrones.
I don't know though,
because a Game of Thrones is kind of most of Lord of the Rings. Except for the fact that there's orcs and stuff like that. I mean, I don't know. Lord of the Rings, to me, I don't think is going to translate well into TV, like episodic. It's got to be a 3-hour movie to cover everything. Otherwise, you're going to be watching so many episodes, having a cliffhanger after each one is going to get really annoying.
My take on it is that, like, I just don't see getting, like, I think a property that large, you know, something that massive, like the Lord of the Rings, is really, like, only destined for movies. I feel like in a TV world, it's not going, I don't know. Like, I feel like that kind of thing is just doesn't fit with television. And, like, with something like Game of Thrones or even Westworld, like, those are, you know, Westworld is a Michael Crichton story, and Game of Thrones is clearly George R. R. Martin, and those stories were around for a long time, and I'm sure that, you know, the Game of Thrones stories, you know, we'll go with those books, you know, they had been around for a long time, but I wasn't necessarily familiar with them, you know, and until the television show came about, and I pay attention to these kinds of things, you know, I read these kinds of books, and sometimes you just miss stuff, you know what I mean? I didn't know of The Walking Dead until it became super popular, but I've never been a huge comic book reader, you know, and I feel like everyone in the world knows the Lord of the Rings. You know what I mean? And so when you take something that everyone knows, you're just begging for criticism. And you just spent a god awful amount of money on it. I think that there are way better properties out there that would be way better suited to a television series that are fantasy or sci-fi related that could give you that next Game of Thrones without risking the fanboy backlash criticism deluge that you know is going to come from trying to make the Lord of the Rings into a TV series. Think of all of the books and series that you and I listen to on Audible alone. You know, you're familiar with, like, the Iron Druid stories, right?
Yeah.
I mean, that right there, like, wouldn't that, right off the top of my head, like, wouldn't that lend itself to a much more entertaining television show? It's amusing. It's fantastical. You know, I'm sure, because there are a lot of books out there and people like you and I both read them without telling each other to go read them. You know, it's got to have a big fan base, like something like that. It's got to be far cheaper to get the rights to. I think something like that would lead itself to being a much more profitable, possible. You know, I don't know about profitable. I don't know. You know, much more successful show in a television series than something like Lord of the Rings. You know, there's all kinds of other stories as well. You know, think of something like the Robert Jordan, you know, The Wheel of Time, which is already in production. You know, like, another company already owns that. But as we've discussed before, but, you know, something like, you know, stories like those that have been around for a while, you know, I believe, is it Amazon or is it Hulu? I think it's Amazon who's doing it right now with, like, Good Omens. You know, they're turning that into a miniseries or whatnot. you know, a very, very great property, a very great story, but something that's not nearly going to draw the criticism, I think, that trying to make Lord of the Rings into a TV show is.
Yeah, they need to bring back Dresden Files.
I liked the Dresden Files TV show when it was on. I liked that the guy what was it, Harry Blackthorne?
Yeah,
I think he's now on, you know, Arrow. I thought that I've never listened to any of the Dresden books or read any of the Dresden books, but I thought the TV show, I was familiar with the story of them. You know, I was familiar with who he was, and I was told, well, you should really watch the show, you know. And so I watched it, and I thought it was pretty cool. So I would absolutely be cool with some kind of Dresden reboot.
Awesome.
So, I don't know. That's my take on a Lord of the Rings television series. I'm sure there's a lot of people out there who are super excited to hear this, you know. I don't know if it's something that I don't even know if I'll give it a chance. It's just, I was never a huge Tolkien fan to begin with. Were you?
No. See, that's one of the big problems is I'm just not, I don't know. I'm just not a big Tolkien fan at all.
I
think
Hobbit.
It's too much,
you know,
fantasy for me.
As a kid, I read The Hobbit and, you know, saw the movies or the cartoon and stuff. You know, I watched the Lord of the Rings movies in the theaters when they all came out. So, you know, I thought they were great. I did not watch the Hobbit movies when they came out. I watched them, you know, since, like, on DVD and stuff, but I didn't think they were that good. This is not something I would follow, you know. It just seems that's a lot of commitment, and it's a... it's just a world that I'm not that invested in. So, and I'm afraid, and like I said, I'm just afraid that it's just going to tank, you know. I'm afraid that they're going to put out, like, you know, one season or one episode, and it's just going to receive so much backlash and criticism that it goes away.
All righty.
All right, well, moving on to the last thing, from Amazon to HBO, and I believe we've talked about this in the past before, and there have been rumors of this and that and the other thing, and it was recently reported by TV Line that sources at HBO are eyeing a fall 2018 production start date for a Deadwood revival movie.
Woo.
So I know you and I have talked about this. I think we most recently talked about this when the one guy passed away, the guy who ran the brothel. Everybody has a brothel in that show. You know, you remember who I'm talking about? I can't remember the actor's name now.
Man, I don't know. I don't remember talking about it.
All right. So you're just going to have to, like, IMDb the people here while I talk about this.
Oh, and, Powers Booth is who you're talking
there
about.
There you go. Powers Booth. Yeah. He's the guy who passed away. Because I believe we talked about how, like, it's going to be hard to have a Deadwood revival without, you know, without him.
Okay.
So,
yeah.
You know, clearly they're going to have to, you know, kill the character or just write him out in some way.
Yeah, you'd have to do something because he was a pretty decent part of it. I don't know.
So the sources have confirmed to TV Line that a fall 2018 production start date is in the works. Obviously, they can't confirm any details or anything. Paula Malcolmson, who played Trixie the Whore opposite Ian McShane as Al Swearengen, she told TV Line that the two-hour continuation is a big Valentine to the pair, and that they've expressed confidence that despite a long and rocky development period, that I really think it'll happen this time, and I would never say that. I'm usually the most cynical about these things. So that's a quote directly from Trixie the Whore. So she seems to be of the opinion that this is, you know, truly going down, and that, you know, she and Ian McShane are both super on board. So I know, like I said, we've talked about it in the past. I loved this show. I thought it was amazing. So I'm super excited for a Deadwood revival movie, because I think that's the perfect way to do it too, because you're never going to get all these people back to do like a show again.
No.
So, you know, but if you can bring it back for like a nice badass movie, that's awesome.
Hell yeah. I'd be all over that. I hate the fact that, for a tribulation, you know, we have to say our sources are Trixie the Whore.
I mean, I gave her name too. I read her name too, I believe, but I just found Trixie the Whore to be amusing. The fact that they even wrote it in their article, you know.
That's awesome. Yeah, this would be fantastic. This would be awesome. Give us some closure, please.
That's all I have for TV news.
Okay, so on to...
Tech news.
Some tech news. All right, so let's see here. This first one is I don't know, it makes me sad and giggly at the same time. So the Department of Justice says strong encryption that we don't have access to is unreasonable, but yet they're also saying that iPhone encryption costs lives, Sean.
Lives.
Okay, so how about this? Okay, so they're talking about it's the same basic story as the San Bernardino shooter, where they wanted to get into his phone but they couldn't because it was locked and that kind of thing. Let's see, I'm trying to find the quote. See, gotta get this guy's name. U.S. Deputy Attorney General Rob Rosenstein is his name. And basically, the gist of it is they are in favor of strong encryption as long as they have access to it, which means they're not in favor of strong encryption. Because the whole point of strong encryption is that nobody but you has access to it. That's, I really wish we could get people in the government in Washington to understand just technology in general, overall. Because apparently nobody sat down and explained this to them when they were children. So the second highest ranking official, this comes from 9 to 5 Mac, at the Department of Justice argues that no reasonable person believes authorities shouldn't be able to access the shooter's phone. Okay, now this comes from the shooter in Texas that was using an iPhone. Quote, when you shoot dozens of innocent American citizens, we want law enforcement to investigate your communications and stored data. There are things that we need to know. As a matter of fact, no reasonable person questions our right to access the phone, but the company that built it claims that it purposely designed the operating system so that the company cannot open the phone even with an order from a federal judge. So basically, to me, it sounds like he's calling Apple a liar, saying there's no way they would have built it so they couldn't get into it. Yeah, there is. There's a lot of ways. And you can bet after the last time you guys tried to poke Apple and force them into unlocking a phone that they made that change, because now they're not legally liable for it. Number one. Number two, this is what pisses me off the most. Okay. If you're using an iPhone, nowadays, more than likely, you have Touch ID on that phone. You can open it with your fingerprint. Once the shooter is dead, what is to stop you from putting their finger on the goddamn phone? How hard is that? You got it right there. Unlock it. And then just keep it unlocked. Because once you have the finger, you can turn off the PIN code. You can turn off, you know, Touch ID and leave the phone unlocked permanently. Why is that so hard to do? You know why? Because they want to use it as an excuse to get rid of this kind of encryption. I know that's a little conspiracy theorist-esque, but that's how it feels. Because doesn't that seem... I mean, the shooter would have been carrying the phone on him in the first place. How hard would it have been for the people at the scene to just unlock that phone? You know? What are your thoughts on this?
I feel the same way I did when we talked about it the last time. I mean, I don't feel like anybody should be forced to unencrypt their phone. I don't get why we're talking about it again. You know, I thought we dealt with this.
Yeah, me too, but apparently not. So and Apple has always said they will give up iCloud data under, you know, court order if they have to. They have access to the iCloud data. So that includes backups. That includes iMessage and different things like that. So if you need that stuff, that stuff's out there. Apple can give it to you. But if you need into the phone itself specifically, you have to unlock it. And like I said, even now, even at this moment, they should still have access to that guy's fingerprints. I mean, it's not rocket science. It's not. The last time I checked, I don't think the face ID or the touch ID sensor is specific about, you know, like a living finger, you know? But I don't know. That just seems, maybe it's because that's not bureaucratic enough. If you unlock the phone at the scene, you don't have to fill out the 20 reports that you need to do something. And that's why, because, you know, bureaucracy is basically just a giant dick in the butt of justice. But it just seems so simple to me. You know, don't try to take away encryption. Just be smarter about how you're going to unlock this stupid phone. So, yeah, I don't know. Sorry. It pissed me off when I saw that story. I'm like, really? Again? Just like you said, we're doing this again. But again, the last time they did it, they pulled out of the fight. The FBI decided not to push it because they didn't want a precedent set against them. So you can guarantee they're going to keep trying every single time something like this happens to get that precedent in their favor. I hate that so many things that are happening in today's world makes it a question of us and them. You know, it shouldn't be the government and the people. It should be Americans. We should all be working together, for God's sake. And it just seems like every single story that comes across that has something to do with technology in general is, you know, if it's got the government and technology in it, it's always us against them for some damn reason. So, you know, like I said, I'm sorry that I get twitchy about this, but it is one of my pet peeves. So, let's see. Next, Tesla has some new toys. One of them's a toy. One of them's for work. You know, it's something like that. So they announced their new semi truck, an electric semi. Companies like Walmart, I believe, has already put in orders for some of these suckers. let's see here. We're talking stuff like, you know, full-on electric semi with self-driving advancements. You know, pre-order. Walmart says it's pre-ordered 15 of the trucks.
They look super futuristic.
They do. They're very streamlined because, I mean, you don't want to have any drag if you don't need to because, you know, you're working off electric. Four-motor truck with self-driving capabilities and a 500-mile range.
self-driving capabilities. I'm not sure I'm ready to have semis flying down the roads without drivers behind the wheels.
Well, as of right now, there's going to be drivers, but you know, it makes it to where the drivers don't have to have, you know, it sounds scary too, but they don't have to have their hands on the wheel all the time. But you got to figure the majority of semi trucks don't have to turn or all that often. So they're really just going down highways, and the self-driving capabilities probably will help a little, because the truck will know, for instance, you know, it's a common thing. You don't get in a semi truck's blind spot. If you have to get in that spot, you have to get out of it as soon as you can. So with this, you know, the truck will know what's in its blind spot. The driver doesn't have to. So that'll help people quite a bit, I think. I'm just glad to see another electric vehicle on the road, me personally, you know. I really want one of these. Not a semi-truck, but a Tesla. Or maybe a semi-truck. Maybe I need a fucking semi-truck. I don't know. I'll just drive that to work. Why not? So it'll drive itself to work for me. And I'll have a trailer on the back. We'll set up like a living room with the TV and, you know, some game systems and stuff.
Why yeah.
Okay. Now something for Sean. The second generation Tesla Roadster. Remember the Tesla Roadster? It was the crazy supercar that Tesla put out as their proof of concept.
Right.
Their first car. And the thing was stupid fast and stupid expensive.
They just wanted to show that, like, you can make a badass electric car.
Yeah, exactly. So Tesla's second generation Roadster will be the fastest production car ever made. So let's see here. They have, okay. The base model will do 0 to 60 in 1.9 seconds.
Yeah. It says it's the first production car to ever crack the 2 second mark.
Uh-huh. It'll go from 0 to 100 in 4.2 seconds and will clear the quarter mile in 8.9. So all your Fast and Furious friends who owe you a 10 second car, screw those guys. let's see here. Elon Musk would not confirm the top speed, but he said it was above 250 miles an hour. Oh man. The Roadster has a 200 kilowatt hour battery pack and a 620 mile range per charge, which on its own is freaking crazy. I mean, that is bananas, man, because most of these cars don't have that kind of range. Now, granted, if you're buying a Roadster, you're probably flooring it a lot, and that range will go down. But 620 miles on an electric vehicle, that's awesome. All-wheel drive, 3 motors, 1 in the front, 2 in the rear. Torque steering. Let's see here. You can reserve yours now, Sean. Go ahead and start writing the zeros on that check for $50,000.
That's it?
Yeah, but that goes towards the $200,000 base price. So you pay a fourth of it, and then, you know.
So it's $200,000.
Yes, the $200,000. The reserve price is $50,000.
Okay. Yeah. So that's, I was like, there's no way that this car is only $50,000.
No, it's $200,000.
Honestly, even $200,000 sounds like a reasonable price for a car that is like basically like one step away from a supercar.
I wouldn't even say one step. I'd say it's a supercar. Production car? Yeah.
The fastest production car ever made. Yeah, I mean, that's crazy. I mean, I don't understand, like, because what is the cheapest model of Tesla go for nowadays?
Well, it depends, because let me see here. Let me try and go to Tesla's website. So right now the standard is the Model S. The Model S. You can configure them however you want, but I think the one I want is like 60,000.
But I thought they had gotten like down their cheapest base model down to almost like $30,000 something like that.
That is the Model 3, and it hasn't really come out yet.
Oh, okay.
It's supposed to, you can reserve one today, and it'll be delivered in 12 to 18 months. And that one starts at $35,000 before incentives. So, I mean, that's, you know, but then you got the model, for instance, the Model 3 only has a 220-mile range at its base.
Sure. I'm just looking at the prices and stuff, and I'm just saying, like, hey, like, even at that point, like, we've gotten these things, like, you know, we've gotten these things down to a $30,000 price tag. Like, I don't understand why more companies aren't jumping on board, you know, and like, you know what I mean? Like, I just don't understand why we just haven't eliminated, you know, gasoline engines at this point.
Oh, come on. You know, like, why we haven't.
I know why we haven't, but it's just absurd at this point now.
I don't want to be the conspiracy
theorist. I know. Me neither. But he has clearly shown that you can do this, and not only do it, but do it and make some badass cars, you know?
Exactly.
And your badass cars can be cheaper than fossil fuel supercars, and we've even got, you know, the cheap cars down to a modest price as well. Now, once you can get a car, like, you know, once Tesla can put out like a
$20,000.
I was even going to go all the way down to like, you know, 16, you know, like, you know, Chevy Cavalier, you know, like just the cheapest model of like fuel, you know, like a Kia, you know, like a normal gasoline car, you know, like that lowest level. Like once you can get an electric car at like the same level of the lowest gasoline new model vehicles, you know, like that, what's like the cheapest car on the market go for nowadays? Probably about 12 grand. And it's got to be a Kia. Like a brand new car. So, you know, once you can get one down into that, we'll just say the teens, you know, then I truly don't know like why everyone's not moving in that direction. Cause it's clearly what needs to be done.
The Nissan Versa S sedan is $12,780. That is, the cheapest as of right now, I believe.
Mm-hmm. I'm surprised it's not a Kia. They usually have new stuff. You know, they're usually the cheapest car in the world.
Let's see some brands here. Nissan. This is going up in price. So 13, you got the Chevy Smart is 13. Ford Fiesta is 14. Kia Rio, 14,350. Ford Fiesta, 15. Chevrolet, 15. Toyota, 15. Yeah, so Kia comes in like fourth.
But yeah, like, I mean, obviously we haven't gotten to the point where there are, you know, Teslas available at that level. And I don't know a whole lot about like the electric cars that, like, you know, that some of the other companies have made, like the Chevy Volt.
Yeah.
You know, like, I don't know.
Those are in the 30s, 40s.
Or even those smart cars. Now, those smart cars, are they fully electric or are they like a hybrid?
Let me check.
Because they're what they are is hideous.
They are hideous. Okay, so the electric versions of the smart vehicles. We'll go for the cheapest one. That's $23,900.
There you go.
So
they're getting down there. They are getting down there. But that is a hideous, hideous vehicle. Whereas Teslas all look nice.
Okay, it is city. Let's see, 124 miles, I think, is its range. They're very cryptic on their website here.
Yeah, well, whatever.
Yeah. Yeah, they are hideous, though.
Yeah, whereas the Teslas all look nice. Even the Chevy Volt doesn't look bad.
Yeah. No, I mean, see, and that's what's weird, is that companies like Chevy and Nissan and Smart, they're making these little electric cars to look like little electric cars.
Right.
Whereas all of Tesla's vehicles, even the Model 3, the budget one at 30, you know, 30, 35,000, they all look like luxury cars.
They look like a $30,000 sedan.
Exactly. It looks good. I mean, the Model S looks like, I mean, I would stack it up against a Beamer or, you know, like a high-end Porsche or a Cadillac or even a Lincoln. You know, it looks like a really nice luxury car. But yeah, all the other companies, they have this preconception that smart cars need to look like smart cars for some reason. Or electric cars need to look like, you know, little electric cars. And I don't like that.
Yeah.
So they need to get with the times and take a play out of Tesla's book, please. Or, you know, for that matter, this is what I haven't understood. Why not take, current cars and make them electric? Like,
right.
You know, use all the space for the engine and all the, you know, fuel lines and all this different stuff and try to make them electric. I'm sure that they could figure out a way to do it. But tell me you wouldn't be interested in an all-electric Dodge Charger.
Right.
That would be sweet as hell. I would love that. You know, or an all-electric, and to their credit, they're working on this, an all-electric Ford Focus. You know, I mean, that would be cost effective, you would think.
Right.
So, you know, yeah. A Dodge Dart, an all-electric Dodge Dart, that would be kick-ass. That's a sporty little car for, you know, it's a cheaper car, but it's a sporty little thing. I've driven one. So you put a little all-electric motor in that, give it a little pep. Heck yeah. I don't know. All right. Let's see here. go to this next article. Just look at this picture of Pie Face himself for me. Because this is how I see his face all the time.
Oh.
So tell me when you've got it loaded.
Have you seen his... I see it. I was hoping it was going to be...
Yeah.
I was hoping he was going to be holding his giant, dumb coffee mug.
No. Yeah, so, okay. So the FCC is voting to roll back some rules, of course, you know, because that's what Ajit Pai likes to do, is roll back rules. Doesn't like to come up with any of his own, just likes to get rid of the old ones. So the commission's 3-2 vote, this comes from The Verge, along party lines, will roll back rules that blocked companies from owning newspapers and broadcasters in the same local market or from owning two or more TV stations unless there are 8 competing stations in the area. This is basically to keep companies from, you know, monopolizing the media distribution in one area.
This will also come into play and be discussed further in that story in the movie category as well.
Will it?
Yeah. Everything ties together today, man.
Wow. That's good. All right. So, yeah, this is not good. This is a horrible, 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 horrible thing. You know, we're trying to get rid of monopolies. This just allows them to happen, where you're going to have companies that own, I mean, technically, depending on if any regulations come in to stop it, they could own every news outlet in an area. You know, every one of your news channels could be owned by a single major company. And you cannot say that, you know, the news does not influence people, because that is all the news does. Sure, they do the news, but they choose how they say it. And words are very powerful. So the way you say something has a direct effect on how people perceive it, especially if they believe you and credit you as a credible news organization. So if you have this kind of stuff, you know, the regulations were specifically built to prevent one organization from controlling an entire area. Without that, I mean... shit's gonna roll downhill fast, don't you think?
Sure.
Yeah. Sure. After all that.
Sure. Sure. I was just looking something up about the Sinclair Broadcast Group.
The Sinclair Broadcast Group is they're wanting to buy Tribune Media for $3.9 billion.
Right.
It would, the new rules would aid Sinclair in its plan to own a massive network of local TV stations. I don't know. I just, he just really, you know, I mean, I'll give it to him. He's sticking to his guns. You know, this is his track record. You know, it's not like he's being influenced now by other things, but he is just such an asshole. It's resorted to that. All right. So, yeah, FCC screwing the pooch again. Last story. Sprint is taking a play out of T-Mobile's book. According to The Verge, Sprint is including free Hulu with its unlimited plan starting on November 17th, which, as of you listening to this, will be about 3 days ago. So, T-Mobile has had a thing where if you've had a family plan, you were able to get a free, you know, they would pay your Netflix bill, basically, for one account. Let's see here. Sprint just announced that it will be partnering with Hulu to offer free access to Hulu's limited commercials plan for customers on Sprint's Unlimited Freedom plan. I'm not exactly sure which plan that is right off the bat. Unlimited Freedom. Let's see if I can get to Sprint's website. And I don't know if that's a family plan or a single plan. Let's see. Shop plans unlimited. Okay, so I think this unlimited is available as a single. Yes, you can get it as a one-line plan. So yeah, you get free Hulu. I mean, that's not bad. It's the same, like I said, same thing as T-Mobile's doing with Netflix. It's just with Hulu. So basically, if you have Netflix and Hulu, it just cuts your monthly bills in half, like me. So if you're on Sprint, time to get yourself some Hulu.
I'm not, but maybe I should move to Sprint.
Just take that for AT&T. Hulu. I think anyone should move away from AT&T. I don't think that's really a question here. I don't like AT&T. I think we've been over this a lot. So, all right. Let's go ahead and move on.
And now time for movie news.
For movies.
Now time for movie news.
Okay, go ahead. Both these are you.
Yeah, there's not really a whole lot to talk about with the first one. Go to the link in the show notes and watch the new teaser trailer that they have dropped for Deadpool 2. It's called Wet on Wet, and it's brilliant.
It is fantastic.
It is fantastic. Deadpool does a brilliant Bob Ross imitation, and it cracked me up. I love Bob Ross. I love watching him paint on Netflix. And the Deadpool the jokes are hilarious. So
I mean they are Deadpool jokes. One of my favorite jokes he does is, I wish I could all that whiteness. I just wish I could roll around in that white powder and breathe in the sweet smell of the outdoors and freedom. God, I love cocaine.
God, I love cocaine.
when the canvas just changes at one point.
Yeah, every time they move back, the canvas changes. It's a different painting.
Yeah, he's like, holy.
He's like, sweet baby Jesus.
Yeah. And holy fuck knuckles, I'm high. You know?
When they run colors across the screen and it's like, it's colors like Men in Black, yeah, and Doc Brown.
Betty White.
Betty White. Red.
Yeah, you gotta go see the trailer. It's so good.
So there is, in addition to the Bob Ross stuff, there is, you know, a little bit of actual footage from the movie, you know, a little bit of action sequence and stuff like that. So it's worth the watch. It's highly entertaining and can't wait for Deadpool 2. So
yeah, it's gonna be fantastic. Alrighty.
So moving on to the other story we have in the movie category, and this is the story that, as I said, has like tied into other things we've talked about today, and that's that earlier this month it was announced or made public that Disney and Fox had or are having merger talks. So this would essentially be a merger of the number one and number three film studios in the country, which, on a complete side note, like to take it off on a tangent here for a second, Disney is the number one film studio in the country, and they and it's like by like $1 billion more revenue than anyone else, and they don't put out any R-rated movies. Like, isn't that incredibly interesting to you? They managed to make $1 billion more than their nearest rival, and they don't even produce R-rated films?
Well, yeah. I mean, they have a lot of franchises that it's hard to argue with, you know.
Oh, yeah.
So,
I mean, that's just impressive to me. So, this deal, so this ties into what we talked about earlier with Netflix and Fox, and how, Netflix is focusing on original programming, and they're letting deals like their distribution deals, for their content with people like Fox, go away. And Disney has begun pulling their stuff from Netflix in order to create their own streaming service. So it's basically like what happened was, when Netflix came about, like they changed the game, whether it be television, movies, whatever. When it came to media and distribution and of content, they changed the game, and now the game has been changed for long enough that like the big boys at the table are making their moves, and like Disney is now pulling their stuff from Netflix, creating their own streaming service. Now they're in talks of acquiring 20th First Century Fox and basically all of their entire catalog of television and movie programming in order to make, their new streaming service, the one-stop shop for everything you need. I just find this whole situation like incredibly interesting here. And it ties into the FCC thing you were talking about earlier, because it says that they would be selling off most of 21st Century Fox to the Walt Disney Company, although not the broadcast network or its sports programming. Disney already owns ABC and ESPN, so that would make similar acquisitions of networks or sports programming moot, or as it says here, possibly illegal, because there are currently rules that dictate how many stations you can own of a certain, in a certain area, and things like that. So now, who's to say what the regulations you just talked about being rolled back or being eliminated would have to affect this, and that's why I was looking up Sinclair Broadcast Group, because Sinclair Broadcast Group was specifically mentioned in your story, and they are the largest Fox affiliate in the United States. So they are specifically, the largest television broadcast affiliate. So they would be directly impacted by that whole, acquisition or non-acquisition of additional Fox television rights. So what do you think here? I mean, this is obviously just like, the rich getting richer. I know you're never on the side of like, the number one and number three companies merging to become a giant number one. But it's really like, it's like condensing the movie industry, because the movie industry is no longer just the movie industry, Like I was reading, I don't know if it's in this article or not, but they were talking about how like this is like Disney combining with Fox in order to combat Netflix and Amazon and like, the other like gigantic players in like worldwide media distribution, so thoughts?
When it comes right down to it, the way I see it is there's a lot of people who are going to make the decision, the conscious decision. Like, for instance, T-Mobile. I go with T-Mobile, not because T-Mobile is the best network in my area, but because T-Mobile is the only network that I think is not a bunch of jackasses in suits. It'll be the same thing for something like this. If they're trying to merge in order to combat the likes of Netflix and Hulu and Amazon, it's not going to do them any good for people like me, because I'm going to look at it as it's a giant company producing content, making giant heaps of money off of it. And I would rather stay with the companies that don't do that kind of thing, that, you know, are for the people as opposed to for themselves. So, yeah, it's fat cats getting fatter. I think the FCC rules are rolling back will probably help them with this in one way or the other. I don't think taking two very large companies and putting them together as one super company is ever a good idea. Even if it's one of my favorite, you know, lovebird tech companies, I still think it's probably not a great idea.
Now, just think about, you know, the implications here when it comes to, like, the Marvel Cinematic Universe, you know. Fox owns the rights to the X-Men series. And is that the only Marvel property, too? Or do they also have Fantastic Four? That might be Sony. No, I think Spider-Man is Sony.
Yeah, well, Spider-Man was Sony. Then it went to what? It was Sony, then it went to Fox, and then I think it went back to Sony, maybe? I know they were originally Sony.
I think it stayed with them the whole time. I think that was why they had to reboot it with James Garfield, because they had to make new Spider-Man movies or they'd lose their rights to it.
Okay, so 20th Century Fox. This is coming from Screen Rant. They have a nice little Venn diagram that shows you all that. 20th Century Fox owns Fantastic Four, Deadpool, Silver Surfer, Wolverine, Cable, X-Men. They also have shared rights with Marvel Studios for Scarlet Witch and Quicksilver.
Nice. See, that's fantastic. I mean, think about that. Like, think about adding all of those. In fact, in this article and down at the bottom during the discussion, it links to like an even larger stable of superheroes, it says, and then it's a whole other story about, you know, all these different superheroes that would be added to the stable of the Marvel Cinematic Universe if this deal were to go through. So, you know, that's pretty big, you know, that for Marvel, at least, getting the rights back on quite a few of their properties and including them in that extended universe. So,
yep. As long as they keep Deadpool rated R, I'm happy.
Yeah, and Deadpool too. I mean, that would be awesome, wouldn't it? How awesome would it be for like Ryan Reynolds as Deadpool to just like be able to randomly pop up as an asshole character in any every Marvel movie? Like, that should be the thing, you know? Like, instead of Stan Lee, it should just be like Deadpool randomly pops up and is an asshole in every movie for just like one scene, you know? that would be brilliant. So, if this goes through, then it would leave that corporate giant with only four other competitors in like the movie industry, and that's Warner Brothers, Paramount, Universal, and Sony. And those are your four other players. So, I mean, think about it. There's only six right now, you know. But it would be a combination of one and three, which is that's pretty scary to some people. So,
yeah, true that. Okay. Well, let's see here. Now we are on to some LOLs. Let's see. So I titled this one Embrace Our Robot Overlords. I don't know if you actually like looked at the article yet or not.
I am looking at it.
So, and this comes from Live Science, which, by the way, is one of my favorite sites to get weird news from now, for this exact reason. Former Google and Uber engineer Anthony Lewandowski, hope I said that right, according to a recent back channel profile, filed paperwork with the state of California in 2015 to establish Way of the Future, a non-profit religious corporation dedicated to the worshiping AI. So they're worshiping artificial intelligence.
Sweet.
The church's mission, according to the paperwork obtained by Back Channel, is to, quote, develop and promote the realization of a Godhead based on artificial intelligence and through understanding and worship of the Godhead, contribute to the betterment of society. So, yeah. All hail our robot overlords. Is this a church you would be a member of, Sean?
No, absolutely not. No? I mean, I'm not going to join any church, but I mean, more power to them. It doesn't bother me one bit.
Yeah, I don't know. I guess it depends on the AI that they choose. I don't know. AI, artificial intelligence is created by man. Therefore, you are worshiping a god created by a man. I don't know. That seems like it could go very wrong. But who knows? I'm not really an organized religious person. So. But yeah, that's basically it. Just, you know, all hail our robot overlords. Okay, so Sean. Thanksgiving's coming up.
Oh man, I forgot about this.
And we're going to be calling this until I come up with a better title, if I do, if I have time, you know, how this goes. Thanksgiving feast. What we are going to be doing is trying to come up. What do you want to do? Eight. How many things do you normally have for Thanksgiving dinner? Let's think of that. You have turkey, ham, stuffing, potatoes, cranberry
sauce.
Did you
say turkey and ham?
Yeah.
Well, I mean, like, I'm...
Right?
I think turkey is more like traditional.
Well, yeah, but you gotta, I mean, you know. So, I mean, that's five things. So five things. You
what
figure
did you
if
say?
We...
Did you say turkey, ham, stuffing?
Yeah, potatoes.
Potatoes. You gotta have, like, green bean casserole or something. You know, or at least, like, you know, a vegetable like green bean casserole or corn or something.
Okay, so how about eight things? You think that's enough?
Oh, sure, that's plenty.
Okay.
That's plenty.
So we're gonna come up with eight things that that we would have on our Thanksgiving table. Weird things from movies and TV. This is going to be weird. It's going to be strange. Okay, so who wants to go first? You did the math the last time. But this is not a top eight. This is just eight things.
We're just coming up with a food. We're just coming up with a Thanksgiving dinner that is solely on fictional foods.
Okay.
And yeah, I'm trying to like Google something. You already Googled something. You already have something brought up, right? So I'm trying to find like a good list to look at. All I can find are like crappy slideshow galleries.
Nice.
Here we go. Wikipedia. There's not a whole lot of stuff listed here, Wikipedia. What did you Google?
Weird food from movies.
Weird. See, why does it have to be weird? Like, it sounds scary.
Just what I went with. I've already got three. I need one more.
Let's see. Well, why don't you go ahead and name one? Like, what is your first one?
Okay, my first one is going to be Poplars from Futurama.
I remember that. They were like little like
they were they looked like little shrimp things? Like popcorn shrimp, but they were amazing.
Yeah.
Until one of them suddenly pops, you know, sprouts a mouth and eyeballs, and then they realize that they're just like little they're like little beings, little things. And Leela goes on a mission to save the Poplars. Let's see here. According to cookingchannel.tv.com, one of the most addictive snacks in the year 3000 is Poplars. These delicious little brown balls became a worldwide delicacy after the Planet Express crew brought them back to Earth after a mission. Of course, they turned out to be living creatures, but that's a whole nother can of slurm.
Slurm, that's another good one.
Okay, I did mine. Man. How about you?
Yeah, you got another good one. I can't find anything. It's like, maybe I should type like weird fictional foods or something in.
Yeah.
The seven weirdest fictional foods. Oh, let's pick something from here. Oh, that I know what I want right off the bat. I just saw it. Now I've gotta find the description of it so I can read it. Oh, and there's another good one there too. Okay, so my first choice is I want Cheesy Blasters. Cheesy Blasters is from 30 Rock. Did you ever watch 30 Rock?
I did not. Oh yeah, I watched 30 Rock. That was Tina Fey and yeah, I watched that. Cheesy Blasters, okay.
Right. And so, like, she describes Cheesy Blasters, and she says, you take a hot dog, stuff it with some cheese sauce, fold it in a pizza, you got Cheesy Blasters. And she goes, and then they say, thanks, Meat Cat, and he flies away on his spaceship.
Wow.
It's a whole thing. It's a whole bit. It is hysterical. And so, yes, I'm choosing Cheesy Blasters, which is a hot dog stuffed with cheese, folded, wrapped in a pizza. And that is Cheesy Blasters.
Okay. Okay. So let's see here. We got Cheesy Blasters. I am going to follow up Cheesy Blasters. Well, those sound like appetizers. So I'm gonna say after the appetizers, you have a main course. Gotta have a main course. And I'm gonna say the main course is going to be. I am so gonna say this wrong. Gah. Sounds appetizing already. Gah is. Let's see here. Signature dish is essentially just a plate of worms. Not just any worms, however. Klingons, who made this dish, eat something called serpent worms.
Mmm.
Yeah, so Gah is from Star Trek. I'm going to have so many Klingon nerds out there that are like, you don't say the G-H, it's a or something else. I'm sorry, I don't know. I don't know Klingon.
All right.
All right.
That sounds delicious. I'm gonna follow that up. I'm gonna follow that up with this salad here that I see from How I Met Your Mother.
Okay.
It is a 7-layer salad. So you know, I feel like that's a nice appetizer to go along with your worms and our cheesy blasters and what was the first thing?
Poplars.
Oh yeah, poplars, yeah. Cheesy blasters. So your worms. I'm not even going to try to pronounce it. Gah. And now a 7-layer salad from How I Met Your Mother, which consists of lettuce, bacon bits, cabbage, Funyuns, gummy bears, potato chips, carrots, and mayonnaise.
Oh wow! How I Met Your Mother, huh?
How I Met Your Mother's 7-layer salad.
Okay. And let's see, after the salad, you're going to have to cleanse your palate. I suggest cleansing it with a Pangalactic Gargle Blaster. Yes, it's a drink, but it might as well. It's a food item. That's just how it works. So the Pangalactic Gargle Blaster is the best alcoholic drink in the entire universe. And let me see if I can find Pangalactic Gargle Blaster. There's actually a way that it is described. Okay. Let's see here. It's considered by the Hitchhiker's Guide to the Galaxy to be the best drink in existence. Its effects are similar to having your brain smashed in by a slice of lemon wrapped around a large gold brick. So there you go. Pangalactic Gargle Blaster. All right. And what do you got?
Oh, what's next? What's next? I don't have a good one here. I mean, what are we on now? How many more do we have?
We have three more. You, me, and then you.
Okay, so I have to pick two more. Well, I'm going to go with an easy one now then. And it's, I mean, it's super Thanksgiving friendly because now we should be getting into like, you know, main dishes here.
Sure.
And this one's even turkey. And it's so it's very simple and it's not gross at all. It actually sounds 100% delicious. And it's the Ron Swanson, and the Ron Swanson is Ron's signature turkey leg wrapped in bacon from Parks and Recreation. So, yes, I'm going to go with the Ron Swanson turkey leg, as my next choice.
It does need to be said that we are pretty much coming up with these right out of the crack of our asses. I mean, make no mistakes. We did very little research.
Yeah. I'm Googling things right now. They're just trying to, yeah. spark my memory of, you know, like weird foods from TV shows or something.
Yeah. Let's see.
That's why when I saw 30 Rock and Cheesy Blasters, I was like, oh, hell yeah. Cheesy Blasters is hilarious.
Okay, so now I've got to come up with another one, man. Okay. I think I've got... Oh, which one of those two? Okay, I got to go with this one. So I'm going to stick with the kind of sci-fi-ish thing I got rolling here. Because there's just got some really interesting food and sci-fi stuff. My runner up, by the way, was going to be, from Babylon 5. It was going to be Spoo.
Oh yeah. I saw that one on a list.
Yeah, but it's just worms. So it's kind of like only in sandwich form. So I'll leave that alone. Instead, I will go with a different insect, and I will say mine is going to be Kepmuk blood ticks from Galaxy Quest. Dr. Lazarus. That's his home dish. Kepmuk blood ticks.
Don't know that one. Ah, I can't find another good one. I keep seeing a lot of the same things over and over again. Lots of people mentioning like Lembas bread or something like that.
Oh, Lembas bread. Ring.
Yeah, from Lord of the Rings, and butter beer from Harry Potter, Scooby snacks, all kinds of that. I've seen tamacos from The
tamacos,
Simpsons.
Yeah, tamacos. There's a lot of tamacos.
Many times.
I almost said the tamaco.
It's a good one. That was a great Simpsons episode.
Everlasting Gobstoppers.
Everlasting Gobstoppers I've seen mentioned a lot. No.
Spaghetti and syrup. From Elf.
Oh, yeah, I didn't know that one. Spaghetti and syrup. Ugh. I mean... Could always do like fish fingers and custard from Doctor Who.
Jammy Dodgers.
You know. Yeah. Jammy
you gotta have
Dodgers,
a dessert.
Right.
Maybe dessert is your thing.
We do need a dessert. Oh, I thought I saw a dessert earlier that I could use, but now I can't remember. Damn.
A dehydrated pizza from Back to the Future. Gingerbread Man from Shrek.
Was there anything weird on Star Trek that you can think of? Like, you
oh
know,
God,
I can
always
remember
weird
from Star...
things on Star Trek.
Well, I'm sure there was, but like, I can't remember anything like that they like regularly had. Like, all I remember from Star Trek was like, you know, Earl Grey tea. You know,
Soylent Green. I forgot about that.
Green. That's a good one.
Man, Soylent Green. It's people. I'll save you the trouble.
Let's see here. All kinds of beers. You know, every cartoon has its own beer, like Pawtucket Patriot from Family Guy and Duff Beer from The Simpsons. Cheesy Poofs from South Park. That's another good one.
Yeah.
Damn, I just can't find anything that I really like that much. Krusty Burger. I do like that from The Simpsons.
Yeah. Let's go. Krabby Patties.
Krabby Patties. I'm going to go with the Krusty Burgers from The Simpsons, though, just to finish this thing off.
Krusty. Oh, Krusty's with a K, isn't it?
Yeah.
Krusty Burgers. Okay. So to recap our list. Poplars from Futurama. Cheesy Blasters from 30 Rock, which sound delicious. Gah from Star Trek. Seven Layer Salad from How I Met Your Mother. Pan Galactic Gargle Blasters from The Hitchhiker's Guide to the Galaxy. The Ron Swanson Parks and Recreation, which also sounds delicious.
I know.
Kepmuck Blood Ticks from Galaxy Quest. And Krusty Burgers from The Simpsons. I'm not eating here.
I don't know. Half the stuff sounds delicious.
Half of it. So. But, you know, I don't know. I don't think I wouldn't eat anything that name sounds like the sound I make when I see it. Gah! You know? So, okay. So that's that. Let's see if there's any movies we need to talk about before we head out here. November. And we are looking at, let's see, movies from November 20th to December 1st. Okay. Let's see here. Let's see. 24th. And then we go into December. There are not, like, any movies coming out. Holy cow. Okay. So, let's see. Oh, wow. Movies coming out November 21st. They are limited, both of them. There's only two, and they're both limited releases. Okay, so not there. So it'll be December 1st. Wow. Slow movie week. Jeez, oh, Pete. Okay. Let's see. December 1st, Wonder Wheel. Let's see. Kate Winslet, James Belushi, Justin Timberlake, Juno Temple, a drama set in Coney Island during the 1950s, includes larger-than-life characters, lovers, infidelity.
Next.
Yeah, it's only two words left. Director Woody Allen? What?
Ooh.
Okay. Oh, this one's all you, Sean. All you. The Shape of Water. Octavia Spencer, Sally Hawkins, Michael Stuhlbarg, Michael Shannon, Richard Jenkins, Doug Jones. An otherworldly fairy tale set against the backdrop of Cold War era America, circa 1963.
Ugh,
in the hidden
ice. First two are both like, well, I mean, they're not really period pieces because they're only in like early 1900s, but still. I don't know what designates a period piece and what doesn't, but still, I don't care.
This is a chick who falls in love with a sea monster.
What?
Now you want to hear about it, don't you?
I want to hear about it.
I'm not going to use my veto powers, but if you want to hear about it, I'll finish.
Okay, finish it. Okay. I want to hear this.
Because I don't think it's going to be that good, but okay. An otherworldly fairy tale set against the backdrop of Cold War era America, circa 1963. In the hidden high-security government laboratory where she works, lonely Eliza is trapped in a life of silence and isolation. Her life is changed forever when she and a co-worker, Zelda, discover a secret classified experiment. It doesn't explain anything about it, but she falls... It's like a... Oh man, he's like a sea, like a creature that lives in water. You remember Hellboy?
Right.
The character Doug Jones plays in Hellboy?
Yeah.
It's kind of the same thing, but she falls in love with him.
Right. So it's like Beauty and the Beast, but with like a sea monster. Yeah,
that's a good way of putting it. I like that. Yeah.
That sounds stupid.
I didn't say it was good. I just said it was interesting.
All right. Moving on.
Okay. Let's see here. There's not many left. I'm going to just pick a limited release. Apparently, this is a prequel coming out in New York and Los Angeles, just so you know. Oh, God, this is going to be horrible. Brotherhood of Blades 2, The Infernal Battlefield. Yaming, Chen Cheng, Zhang Yi. I'm not going to say the last one. I know I'm going to butcher the crap out of that one. An Imperial Guard searches for the truth behind a conspiracy that framed him and his partners. The proof of his innocence lies...
Next.
Okay, thank you.
I know. This is a martial arts film.
Yeah, it is. There's nothing coming out right now. We probably could have skimmed over Netflix, but I like to give the people what they want. So.
Yeah.
Yeah. All right. So that's all we got for that. Sean, what the hell are you up to?
Well, I've been listening to a new audiobook by Kevin Hearn, who is the author of the Iron Druid series that we mentioned earlier. And this is the only series that this is the only book that I think I've read or listened to that he's written outside of that series. So I was kind of excited to start it. It's a fairly long book. Audible version is 22 hours long. Written by Kevin Hearn, narrated, of course, by Luke Daniels, but also a female narrator, and I'm going to butcher her name. It's just X-E, so I believe that's like Xi. Xi Sands is the female narrator of the Audible version, and it's much more like high fantasy, you know, than say the Iron Druid story is. There's really no comedy, you know. It's just a true, you know, Tolkien-esque kind of fantasy story so far, and it took me a while to get into it, honestly. It's a long story, and it is told in a very segmented way that I feel would have been easier to follow if I was just reading it as opposed to listening to the audiobook. So it took me a little while to really get into it and fully comprehend what was going on in the story. So, but now that I'm into it, it's good. It's a good story. I think I like the Iron Druid stuff better. But it's worth a read if you've got 22 hours to devote. Or listen, I guess I should say.
Yeah. Okay. Cool.
And then in addition to that, you will be pleased to know that I finally ripped the seal off the package and opened Fallout 4.
Oh my God.
And began playing the game just yesterday. I did this. So I played for about 4 hours yesterday, I think. That's including like the amount of time it took to like download the updates that it needed and create my character. And
do you have like the base version, or is it Game of the Year? Do you have the DLC, or
I just have the base version?
Oh, okay.
But I started playing it. I enjoyed it. It's a little overwhelming. The crafting and stuff like that is just astronomically more advanced than it was in like Fallout New Vegas.
Yeah.
So that's a lot to get used to, and I'm not really big into that kind of thing. I didn't do a whole lot of it in Skyrim. I did a little bit, but not a lot. But other than that, it's been really cool. You know, just like any Fallout game, I've been pretty impressed. I like some of the changes they've made to like the leveling system and stuff like that. You know, I got in a power armor suit yesterday. You know, I was surprised. I ended up in a power armor suit fighting a Deathclaw in like the very first mission.
That's kind of the first thing you do.
was like, well, what the hell, man? Just like throw you into the fire in this game, don't they? Jesus.
Oh no, there's so many more levels of power armor. You've got like the baby, you got the baby training wheels version.
And see, that's kind of one thing that like I'm really not necessarily looking forward to is that like I wasn't a big power armor guy in the other games, you know? Like I love to play, you know, like sniper characters or stealth characters, you know? I'm not a big like run around in a big clunky suit of armor kind of guy.
My thing is I'm a stealth character, sniper, silencers, that kind of thing. Unless I'm trying to take on something that is way above my level, then I'll hop in my power armor and go beat its ass.
Well, and that's what I did. Like, I put the power armor on for the mission, and I fought the Deathclaw and everything. And then I immediately, you know, ran back to Sanctuary and threw the power armor up on that big contraption where you upgrade it and everything and left again. So
see, my home is the Red Rocket, the truck stop that's between you and the city.
Right. Yeah. I just went and threw it back up in Sanctuary because that's where the people were all going back to. And I wanted to, you know, complete that mission by following them back to Sanctuary or whatever. Okay, so
that's right.
Yeah. I just followed them back and threw it up there and then left again. But I think I managed to level up, you know, like three times during the couple hours I played yesterday. And I have not done anything other than like those first couple missions. I haven't done anything outside of, you know, just running around that general area, messing around, learning the controls, playing with the crafting stuff, you know, playing with the modifications to the guns that you can make, you know, the whole crafting system is very impressive. You know, the fact that you can just basically collect everything and break the junk down into all the stuff you need to, you know, build what you want. So pretty cool.
I'm excited now. I'm glad you're starting it. All right. For me, I just finished a book that you talked about a couple episodes ago, Paradox Bound, from Peter Kleins. It is awesome. I enjoyed it a lot. Time travel's kind of steampunky. It does technically tie into all his other books, if only in like a really quick little,
a really quick vague way. You had to point it out to me earlier this week. I didn't even notice
now,
it. So.
As soon as it happened, I'm like, oh, that's how it does it right there. I knew immediately. When they started describing
it, to me that like that, you know, that I still find it to be a pretty vague reference, you know.
It is vague, like, you know, but
the bugs, you know, the bugs were a much better reference in the previous stories, you know, in the story where they were doing the portals or whatnot, you know.
Well, yeah, those were like head on, you know, full in your face things, but
the
overarching Lovecraftian giant monsters thing.
Yeah.
Just being mentioned in a vague term, because you got to remember that when they're talking about it in Paradox Bound, it's through the grapevine. You know, I heard a story that somebody heard from a guy who once went too far forward in time and that kind of thing. So, but I think it was fun. I enjoyed the whole story. I love time travel stuff.
So do I.
Paradoxes
I felt like
are great.
He did a pretty good job creating his own, you know,
method.
Rules
and
method of time traveling and all that kind of stuff. It was very complicated. You know, obviously you deal with a lot of paradoxes when trying to write a time travel story. And the way he dealt with paradoxes and things like that was very interesting. You know, like the whole town with the three bars was really complicated. You know, like that whole aspect was I thought that was probably the neatest aspect of his time travel story.
Yeah.
Was that specific town, how it was treated by the time travelers.
You always went back to that one time, that one spot in time.
Well, you could only go back.
You only went three times.
Yeah. Right.
The first one, you go to one bar. The second one, you go to the second bar. And then whenever it was all over, everyone was supposed to meet up at the last bar.
At the last bar, right. So, like it was a really interesting plot point in that story. So
it was the bars were named the first time around, the second iteration, and the last paradox.
Yeah, there you go. And I also like the incorporation of like real and historical characters, you know, like John Henry was a time traveler. Uh-huh. James Dean was a time traveler. You know, there were cool historical characters that they had. And I'm sorry, none of them are time travelers. They're travelers through history.
Yeah, that's the kicker. They keep saying traveling through history.
Right. They're not time traveling. They're traveling through history. And the fact that it was, you know, it was exactly that. Like, it wasn't like, oh, I can just travel to anywhere in time that I want. It wasn't that easy, you know. There were complicated rules behind when and where you could go and how you could get there.
Yeah.
Depending on what mode of transportation you were trying to take to get there. John Henry couldn't go anywhere that didn't have train tracks, you know.
Yeah. It's cool. I enjoyed it a lot. Secondly, since I got a Hulu subscription, I've been watching a lot of Hulu originals, giving them a shot. A new one just released called Future Man. They released the entire first season. It is sci-fi, time travel, oddly enough. And it is full of ridiculous, crude dude humor. There's one spot where two characters time travel, but the fuel they use is unrefined, so there's complications, and like one of them gets a scar from another one and the other one swaps their scar to that one, but the funniest part is that one of them ends up swapping dicks with the other one.
What?
Yeah, there's two characters, and like one of them starts to walk away. He goes, whoa, wait a minute, what is this? And he like opens his pants up a little and looks down. He's like, why is it so hairy? It's huge. And then the other one immediately opens his pants up. He's like, oh my God, what the hell is this? It's like, it's a pathetic dick. And it's where is its warrior's mane? And, he starts calling the other one a cock pirate. And it's hilarious. If you like dude humor, it does have a decent story and good character arcs, to be completely honest. You start liking the characters quite a bit. So, check it out. It's actually got, what's his name? It's the guy from The Hunger Games. Let's see here, Future Man. Okay, so in it, the stars are Josh Hutcherson, which is Future Man himself. Derek Wilson is one of the other main characters. His name is Wolf. And Eliza Koo is named Tiger. Let's see. Derek Wilson, you would probably know from Preacher, because you watch Preacher.
No, yeah, I do.
He is Donnie Schenk. I don't know. Yeah, been in a couple episodes of that. But he's freaking hilarious. And Eliza Koo is, if you ever watch Scrubs when they go to college, like, you know, when the Scrubs crew is teaching, and even part of the last season.
She's like the angry blonde gal, right?
Yeah, she's the angry blonde gal who likes fat dudes.
Yeah.
Yeah. But yeah, it's freaking hilarious. So check it out if you have a Hulu subscription. All right, I think that's all we got. So, Sean, tell people where they can find, follow, and or stalk you.
Find, follow, and stalk me on 8daysofgeek.com and on Twitter at SeanMLScott.
And you can find, follow, and stalk me. I'm on Twitter at PinOfDoom, or you can go to about.me/JesseMiller and find out everything about me. Thanks for listening, guys. Sean, since you were on point today, I'm not going to make you say anything.
Sweet.
So just say bye, everybody.
Bye, everybody.
Bye, everybody.
Happy Thanksgiving.
And happy food day to everybody.